This is Progressive Radio, a weekly conversation hosted by Matthew Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine, a leading voice for peace and social justice. For more information about Progressive Radio or The Progressive Magazine, log on to our website at progressive.org.
I'm Matt Rothschild, and welcome to Progressive Radio, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. Today, I'm delighted to have right here in the studio with me Dalia Ashkenazi Landau, an Israeli activist for reconciliation with Palestinians. You may have read about her story in The Lemon Tree, a great book by Sandy Tolan. The subtitle of that book is An Arab, a Jew, and the Heart of the Middle East. Dalia Ashkenazi Landau, welcome to Progressive Radio.
Hey, shalom.
Shalom to you. Tell me a little bit about your background or your family's background.
Well, I was born in Sofia, Bulgaria, and when I was 11 months old, my parents came to Israel as immigrants, and of course they were also refugees from the Holocaust.
Had they been in concentration camps?
No. My mother remembers when the notes came to come and to be in a certain station or a school, and they knew what that meant, that they knew that meant a deportation. But
so they go in hiding? What did they do?
Thankfully, you could say that the Bulgarian people, the church, saved the people. There was a lot of public pressure, and it was a kind of a miracle. The king finally told the trains not to leave, and they were already there. But that could happen only because Bulgaria was an so-called ally of the Germans, so they could negotiate this point.
I didn't know that little history of Bulgaria.
Yes, huh? Yes. So,
and so they
that's how 50,000 people were actually saved.
Wow.
I mean, in the very, very, very last moment before really going onto the trains. But I think that was an important part of my history because I believe that it influenced me in the direction of trust, of trusting that goodness and caring for the other will prevail. Yes.
And do you still believe
part,
that?
I believe that. And I have to believe that because, yes, I do not have any other choice.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that in contact with individuals and becomes a bit more complex when you talk about collectives.
Mm-hmm. And so they came to Israel.
Yes, I was 11 months old and I was in a basket and the boat was called the Pan York. You know, Sandy Tolan, who wrote the book The Lemon Tree, he investigated, went into libraries, and he gave me thick, you know, this papers, and everybody's names who were on this boat were there, including me. Daisy Ashkenazi was there, and everybody's birth date, and according to the story, I was the only one who was not seasick. The boat was overloaded, you know, and really took a long time to come. So that was exciting to get this document with all the provisions, and I think it was all supported by American Jewish people.
And so what are your first memories of Israel as a young girl?
My first memories are of the house. I love animals, and I always had animals and dogs, and one of my very first memories, I think I was 2.5 years old, I remember that I saw the birds coming, you know, and I came to them with a few crumbs of bread to feed them, and just as I was approaching, they flew away, and I was so hurt that they flew away, and I started crying. I just remember that. And also somebody took a picture of this moment so I have it there.
And where in Israel was the house or is the house?
The house is in Ramla, and it's what we call an Arab house. And the whole main street was filled with it. It looked like an Arab town. It was an Arab town. We knew that.
Where in Israel is it?
It is by the airport, by the Ben-Gurion airport between Jerusalem and Tel Aviv. And when my parents came, they told me it was like a kind of, it was a sort of completely empty. There were no people. The animals were in the street. And soldiers, and my father, when we came, so everybody was housed in tents. And then, you know, where will people go? So everybody knew about Tel Aviv, Jerusalem, Haifa, but so my father was asked, would you like to go to a place called Ramle? So my father had never heard of this place. He knew nothing about this place. He said, he was an adventurer, you know, so he said, well, nobody has heard about it. Let's go and make something of it. So he immediately really enlisted himself to helping the newcomers who were refugees from Europe to settle into those houses. And there were four families at the beginning in this four-room house. And with one kitchen and one toilet, and it was, you know, it was not easy.
It was crowded.
Crowded, and gradually people went into new housing. And my father, Moshe, he insisted that we stay there. He told my mother, you know, everybody will find new housing and we'll stay here, and for which I am eternally grateful.
I'm speaking with Dalia Ashkenazi Landau. An Israeli activist for reconciliation with Palestinians, you may have heard of her story or read about it in The Lemon Tree by Sandy Toland, or on NPR on a program that he did about it. The subtitle of the book, The Lemon Tree, is An Arab, a Jew, in the Heart of the Middle East. I'm talking with the Jew. I'm Matt Rothschild. I'm the editor at The Progressive. You're listening to Progressive Radio. What was your parents' attitudes toward Palestinians?
Okay, my parents were socialists from Bulgaria. They also, you know, they escaped from communism, but they were socialists. And as most Bulgarians were, and that, you know, that the State of Israel really grew up on socialism and had this socialism is a very, very basic Jewish concept. It has to do with mutual responsibility, that everyone is responsible for everyone else. And, you know, that this summer we had, how will you call it, a kind of a rebellion against the growing capitalism, or this form of what is called liberal. Far from liberal, it's selfishness, we think. So the middle class, which is the backbone of Israeli society, went into the streets in completely nonviolent ways. And I think this is a great example of a beautiful protest.
These were some of the biggest protests Israel's ever seen.
Maybe the biggest, I think. And why am I telling you this? Because the protest also looked back into the beginning years, the first 20 to 30 years of Israel, and longing to go back to that kind of consciousness of mutual responsibility and collective responsibility, you can say.
So did your parents have that sensibility about mutual responsibility toward the Arabs who used to live in their home or in that community?
Well, they didn't know the Arabs who lived in the home until 1967. When they knocked on our door.
Well, tell me about that.
But they were, Arab is, Ramle is a mixed city of Arabs and Jews to this day. It has about 20% Arabs, citizens of Israel, living in Ramle. And my parents were in connection with these people, a warm connection, and respected them very deeply. But we didn't know any West Bankers. No, not at all.
So the knock comes on the door, or the doorbell rings. What happens?
Well, the knock came on the door when, after the Six-Day War, in which Israel, you know, after feeling, speaking from an Israeli point of view, feeling besieged, by the Arab states around Israel won the war in 6 days, and we ended up with what we call today the occupied territories, and that included Sinai to the south, the West Bank, the holy places in Jerusalem, the Golan Heights, the Gaza Strip, you know, all these territories, which, of course, Sinai was returned. But that made it possible for thousands and thousands of Palestinians to cross freely. They didn't need permits or anything. They could just travel to their homes. And so it was that when I was 19 years old in 1967, there was this ring on the door, and I was alone at home, and I'm opening and I'm seeing the strangest sight. You know, three young men dressed in the strangest clothing. They wore, believe it or not, suits and ties. Unheard of. I've actually never seen that before, except in American films. So there they were, and I knew immediately who they were, and it was as if I'd been waiting for them all my life, unconsciously. You know, it was as if I could feel their atmosphere, their presence in the walls.
So at 19, though, you must have had some understanding that there were prior inhabitants of that house.
Oh,
by that
definitely.
Point.
Oh, yes,
and
definitely.
So it was though you were expecting them then.
It was so. Yes, it was unconsciously, of course, I was expecting them. Yes.
And tell me who they were.
Okay, so they were the son of the Bashir al-Khayri, the son of the people who built the house. You know, Ahmad and Zakia al-Khayri's parents. And they built it as they got married, and they built this house stone by stone, and they planted this beautiful lemon tree in the yard. You know, and this lemon tree had always been there. And I used to tend to this tree. I love this tree. And I used to climb on this tree and pick lemons, and we used to have lots of lemon juice. Yes, and the other two men were his cousins, who also had homes in Ramle. So they had gone and visited the other homes, and I was the last one.
And did they say, we want our home back? How did that go?
Oh, no, they were, I could see that they felt very insecure as to who would open the gate, you know, and what the welcome would be. And they I could sense that. And I could imagine myself. They said, Bashir said, could we please come in to see my parents' home? And I could imagine myself standing in front of my parents' home in Bulgaria and being in exactly the same situation. And I've heard of other Jewish people who'd gone to their homes in Czechoslovakia or Poland or that, and they just wanted to reconnect. And I could understand that very deeply. And I was a woman alone at home, and they were the so-called enemy. So
were you afraid at all?
No. I felt that I could trust them, and I knew that had I told them the logical thing, the commonsensical thing, to come back when my parents were from work, I would have never seen them again, and I was not going to miss that opportunity, you know. So they walked in, and it was strange, but I really wanted them to get a very good impression of the house. It's as if I wanted them to feel that we had taken care of their home. So I told them, oh, wait a minute here, you know, in the yard. Wait a minute, I'm going to set the house in order. Just wait a minute. And in those 5 minutes, they really, later I learned that it had put them in tremendous stress because they didn't know if I was calling the police or something. And many, many years later, you know, it's a story that's now been going on for 44 years.
Well, tell me how the friendship developed from there.
Yes, yeah, so on the way out, but she asked me to repay the visit. And to go to Ramallah at that time was a huge crossing of boundaries, you know, for a woman to go alone. I had to find somebody with a car. I didn't tell my parents where I was going. You know, and then I went to Ramallah, and Bashir was very well known there. He said, the first person you ask will tell you where I live, and this was so. And when I met him, you know, he said, you have to think whether you really want to come upstairs. Of course, you're welcome, but I was just in prison for a few months because it took me some time to get there. So he was already in prison, and I had to ask, why were you in prison? And he said, because I love my country. So that was already, I realized that we were going to have deep political disagreements.
And it was a hint of a bigger disagreement to come. I'm speaking with Dalia Ashkenazi Landau, an Israeli activist for reconciliation with Palestinians. Her story is recounted, as is Bashir's story, in The Lemon Tree by Sandy Tolan. And the subtitle of that is An Arab, a Jew in the Heart of the Middle East. At some point during this early part of the friendship, he was arrested and jailed for a long time for another serious act. Explain that and how that made you feel.
All right. So after the visit to Ramallah, in which I had experienced extraordinary hospitality, and, you know, it was the first time that, you know, I saw his sisters, the first time I saw Palestinian women, and they were very curious about me, and I think that we were admiring each other. And that was such a powerful experience, you know, to just see people. It was very, very powerful. You know, how is the anonymous enemy transformed into a person? I mean, that was the essence of I would say, of that meeting. Because I could see the extended family, and these were people, you know, and we had a conversation with Bashir, which I insisted in that conversation to hear their side of the story, their narrative, which at the time was completely unknown in Israel. The archives of the army were not yet open, so you couldn't get this information. And besides, Arabs were enemies, full stop. And they didn't want us here, and if we weren't strong, we wouldn't exist here. All of which was true, of course. But what was very sad is that we had only our side of the story, in which we were the righteous victims, and it was a complete dehumanization of the other, who of the enemy, you know. So of course, so it was difficult. It was very, very difficult to hear for the first time as a 19-year-old to hear the Palestinian side of the story and of their expulsions from Ramleh, my town, you know, and how they were expelled. And, of course, it was in the course of a war. It was when the Arab world could not accept the partition of Palestine, you know, and Ramleh was supposed to be in the Palestinian side of Palestine. It was supposed to be Palestine. But then the Arab world didn't accept this, and Israel won. You know, from my point of view as an Israeli, I would say thankfully won, because it's a matter of survival for us. But then the population of what was supposed to be Palestine by the partition plan was largely evacuated, exiled, deported, certainly from the Ramleh Lod area. And I came to learn that. And later these things were confirmed in Rabin's memoirs, you know, where he told these things. So that was a time when I learned, and I also learned the discrepancy, the political discrepancy of what the solutions could be, you know. And I could have just left then, and I could have said, you know, Bashir, you're saying that we should go back where we came from, you know, and this is not going to happen. Thank you for the hospitality, and just leave.
But you didn't do that.
No, I had many points of choice. You know, I could not open the door, maybe, or not return the visit to Ramallah, or when Bashir told me he was in prison for a few months, not go upstairs to their home, or at this point when he told me you should go back where you came from, just go, you know, just go and never come back. But I didn't do that because why? You know, I had to think, why didn't I do that? Why didn't I leave at one of these points? Had I left, I wouldn't be sitting here with you, would I? I think I felt, it's a deep question, so I don't know if I'm giving you the whole answer, but certainly a central part of the answer would be that we belong to the same home. And it was like a womb. You say that? Like a mother. Like a mother, this home in Ramle, which was the only home I had ever known, which another family had built. This was the mother. And therefore, it is a connection relationship that cannot be disowned.
And you've stayed with it for 44 years. I'm speaking with Dalia Ashkenazi-Landau, Israeli activist for reconciliation with Palestinians. Her story you can read about, if you haven't already, in The Lemon Tree by Sandy Tolan. The Lemon Tree, an Arab, a Jew in the heart of the Middle East. We only have about 5 minutes left, unfortunately. So I just want to tell the listener that this relationship has persisted over more than four decades and over some very difficult times. Bashir Karim was arrested and jailed for 10 years or so.
15 years.
And beaten and perhaps tortured by the Israelis. And that must have been a shock for you when he was arrested for the crime of participating in a bombing that killed three people. And yet you stayed... You stayed with it, why?
Yeah, it was a terrible shock. And, you know, the visits of the family had stopped because there was a lot of visiting before. And my parents, Moshe and Solia, received them with such generosity and said, we understand about the home. We had lost homes, you know. We understand what you feel and you're so welcome here. And that... And the visit stopped after that, of course, and it seemed the end of an impossible friendship, and I felt deeply betrayed. But during these 15 years, you know, I was an officer in the army and did my university studies and got married and all of this, but I was thinking, your home, my home, our home. What am I, Dalia Ashkenazi Landau, going to do about it? And finally, when Bashir came out of prison and we approached him with this question, we had decided to create an open house, which is a center for coexistence for Jews and Arabs, to create, you know, to get to know each other and create together and work together for a better society, for the healing of our communities and together. And this is what we've been doing for the last 20 years.
Mm. And it's called the Open House Center?
In Ramle.
And people can find out more at openhouse.org?
Can find in friendsofopenhouse.org.
Friendsofopenhouse.org. And so what kind of programs do you put on there, or who you invite there?
Yes. Okay, so we have a nursery school as an affirmative action for Israeli-Palestinian children in their own language and culture, so that gives them a head start, and they're doing very well. So now we have already children at the university, and we have the first father bringing who was in the nursery school bringing his twins to open house. So that's a great thing.
And then so we have the second generation now.
Exactly. And then we have coexistence programs, which are very rich, with the summer camps of Jews and Arabs, leadership training, delegations abroad. We had a delegation to the U.S. in 2002, which was very rich. The children, you know, met with audiences and gave radio and television interviews, and were learning about the history of between the Afro-Americans and the white population here in the States, and what we can learn about it in our context. We had delegations to Holland and also to Japan and other places where young people meet. So that's leadership, young and we work with women, with special programs for women. Where just now, we had a fantastic interfaith program with Jewish, Muslim, and Christian religious women. And we did a program in Jerusalem. We brought our people from Ramla and Lida, Lod, and the program happened in Jerusalem. And, you know, it was a very rich, very successful program. And at the end of the program, the women didn't want to go. So they are keeping it now themselves, and they meet every month and do a program for themselves.
So these are very promising kind of person-to-person reconciliation efforts. What hope is there for nation-to-nation reconciliation efforts?
Well, the way I work is starting with the individual heart, you know, and how we make space for the other in the individual heart. And I believe it's like a candle lighting another candle. We are coming to Hanukkah, we are coming to Christmas, where we light another candle and another candle. So that's the way that we work, because we believe that every individual is also a window to a family and to a community and to a nation.
So you think it's possible?
Hope is my only hope.
that's an interesting philosophical statement. What do you want the listener in her car or in his kitchen or in the office to do, who's listening to this show and wants to help the Open House Center or the general cause?
Yes, to include us in prayer, to expand the heart, to include both sides in the heart. I think that's very important, because if you don't do that, you become part of the problem and not part of the solution. And I know it's challenging. Yes, I would say that.
Well, that's very good advice. I've been speaking with Dalia Ashkenazi Landau, an Israeli activist for reconciliation with Palestinians, one of the co-founders of the Open House Center. You can find it at friendsofopenhouse.org. I'm Matt Rothschild. You've been listening to Progressive Radio. Dalia, thanks so much for being my guest today.
Thank you.
Today's program is available online at progressive.org. You can also write to us at 409 East Main Street, Madison, Wisconsin, 53703. Our music is by Mufa. Progressive Radio is produced by Elizabeth DiNovella and engineered at Audio for the Arts in Madison, Wisconsin.